Dear brothers and sisters, good morning. Today we have a magnificent gospel from the Gospel of Luke. It's a very popular and famous gospel that's been talked about in a lot of different ways. One of the things I wanted to focus on this weekend, or the thing I wanted to focus on this weekend, is the relationship that Jesus has with Martha, Mary, and Lazarus. And to explain that a little bit better, I want to share with you that back in November, some of us were able to go and visit the relics of St. Martha, St. Mary, and St. Lazarus. They're all in southeastern France. And when we got to Lazarus in Marseille, one of the things that I did, it was a rough time, but as we kind of all trickled in together, I was reading the passage from when Jesus raises Lazarus. And one of the things it says there, the Gospel of John says, is that Jesus loved Martha and Mary and their brother Lazarus very clearly. And I looked around and I saw a lot of people, actually some of my pilgrims, crying. And I asked why. It wasn't registering for me. And several different of them told me independently that they were just so moved that this was the day that they had visited the Lord's best friends. That they had visited the friends of Jesus. And I think that's entirely right. There's a famous and funny meme going around social media that says perhaps Jesus' greatest miracle was having 12 close friends in his 30s, right? And there's truth to that, but he had more than 12. It wasn't just the apostles. He was also close, very close, to Martha, Mary, and Lazarus. And this is shown in the Gospel today. I'll get there in a second. But I want to be clear that, you know, the apostles, there was always this sense of at least something of a professional relationship. These were going to be his ambassadors. These were going to be his clergy. But his relationship to Martha, Mary, and Lazarus was strictly friendship. It was incredibly deep. And in order to understand exactly how deep it is, you have to kind of piece together things from the scriptures, because it's not, they don't make it explicit. The gospel writers don't give us all the, like, you know, details we'd like. But you need to realize that, and this is clear in the gospels, Jesus spent the last week of his life with Martha, Mary, and Lazarus. Right? That's where he was living for all of Holy Week. And that's why Mary knew to go and be at the foot of the cross and knew to go to where his tomb was and pray. They were trying to kill Lazarus because Lazarus was a sign of the resurrection. And Martha was probably trying to hold it all together. But let's also look at this gospel today to see their closeness. We're so used to hearing the gospels, we're so used to hearing the scriptures that our brain doesn't process it. So let's take a moment and look at this scene and replace Jesus with me, or with the Pope, but me. Imagine that I came to visit your house, and I'm sitting there, and you come out of the kitchen and say, "Father Sunset, tell my adult sister to get off her butt and come help me in the kitchen because I'm tired of doing all this by myself." And I respond, "Just shut up and come visit. I'm only here for a little while." Is that going to happen the first time that I go to your house? Clearly, even though this is the first time they appear in the Gospels, Jesus had an immensely intimate and casual and forthright relationship with Martha and Mary. Because you don't talk to people like that unless you're really close. And we see that just almost teasing closeness between the Lord and them, and it's magnificent. And so this weekend I wanted to talk about friendship, because it is a Christian virtue. It is something that is very deep. Many saints have written about friendship. There are whole books written about friendship, and I think it's something that's disappeared from our vision of Christianity. Because it was something that did amaze the ancient world, that Christians were able to be friends in a way that nobody else was. And it's based on the Lord's own example. the Lord's own example of profound friendship. The night before he dies, he turns to his apostles and say, I no longer call you servants, but friends. The Lord is profound friendship. And so instead of tracing the historical development of Christian friendship, which I would love to do, but we don't have time, I want to look at a couple of things today that make it very difficult. Literally two things today that make it very difficult. And it's something we need to fight against. It's something we need to work on. And then I'll go into the friendship itself. But let's talk about the difficulties first. The first difficulty is what all sociologists, all psychologists are telling us, screaming at us, that friendship in general is dissolving. That due to social media and phones and everything, which are not bad in and of themselves, but I guess maybe we're just so used to only connecting to people electronically, that friendship, real intimate friendship, emotional friendship is dissolving. I think I read that only 1 in 4 adult men in the United States have a close friend. That's heartbreaking. This reality that having people in your life that you can talk to and talk to on an intimate level is disappearing is heartbreaking. But it is part of our culture. I know, like, my grandma used to have people just come visit for coffee unannounced. Look at me. Look at me. Don't try that in my house. Culture has shifted. And we need to realize that. The second thing that makes it very difficult, and this is real, and it's just baked into us. Since about the middle of the 20th century, due to the stories we read, due to the movies we see, due to the way people talk, because of all of it, all forms of emotional intimacy are being read as romantic. If you're close to someone emotionally, people automatically assume it's a romantic connection. This is not good. It's also an aberration. For a long, long time in human history, the people you were romantically attached to would not be your closest friend. Your closest friend was always someone you were not in love with. Okay? It was never your spouse. This is new, that your spouse is supposed to be your best friend. But this reality, it infects us. Father Albert talks about this a lot, about how man-to-man friendship in particular is disappearing because so many men are worried that it will read as gay. And we had a bishop tell us in seminary that he was joking, but it's also sad. And this was, you know, 20 years ago, worse now. He said, you know, if I go out to dinner with a woman, people think I'm on a date. If I go out to dinner with a man, people think I'm on a date. I need to get a dog, he said, right? And that reality there, that any kind of emotional closeness to someone is read automatically as romantic or impure, makes things very difficult today to be close to people. Because even if it's not coming that way from you, you're always worried the other person will suspect it of that. So these are difficulties, and yet nevertheless, Christian friendship is a real virtue, and it's something that God calls us to. It's not something that everybody attains in this life, but it is something that the scriptures talk about very profoundly, and something that Jesus gives an example to. So the first thing I want to talk about when we talk about the virtue is to distinguish it. So there is a virtue of affability, Thomas says, a virtue of friendliness. And you have to show this to everybody. You can't be a jerk to anybody, even on Facebook, right? You can't do this. You have to be friendly toward everyone. But Thomas is also very clear that being friendly toward someone and being friends with someone are two very different things. We owe everyone friendliness. We don't owe everyone friendship. As the book of Sirach says, let your friends be 1 in 1,000. Right? There needs to be testing, trial. You need to, God sends special people in your life to be your dear friends. when it comes to dear friendship, then spiritual friendship, Aristotle, who is a pagan philosopher, but who Christians use on this, says there are three kinds of friendship, not just friendliness, but friendship. He says there's the friendship of pleasure, which is we like to play cards together, we like to go to the beach together, we like, you know, and all this is fine. And there's the friendship of usefulness, that we're co-workers or we work together on a project or, you know, also perfectly fine. Those are real levels of friendship. But there's something deeper, he says, which is the friendship of honor, where you care about your friend's growth and virtue. Now that sounds very sterile. We have a better way, I think, to say it today, or a way that would resonate with us more today. You care about your friend's well-being. You're actually invested in your friend's well-being. There's another term that's becoming popular today, which is chosen family, right? And that's the kind of friendship that Aristotle was talking about, where you really take responsibility for your friend and they take responsibility for you. It's accountability partner, sure, but it's more than that. It's like, okay, you know, I care about you, and if you're broken, if you're hurting, if something's wrong, I'm gonna be there for you. And that's a real burden. And there's no real friendship without real sacrifice. And I think that's the third reason why we don't do friendship today. Because we don't like being burdened with others. And boy, howdy, do I hear that all the time in my ministry. Oh, this person's toxic, so I have to drop them. Meh. There is such a thing as emotional abuse. Everybody look at me. There is such a thing as emotional abuse. Disagreeing with you politically is not emotional abuse. Disagreements are not abuse. And yet, that's what I hear all the time. Oh, this person, they just upset me so much, they're so toxic, I have to drop them. I don't think you know what toxicity means. Hurt feelings are not the same as trauma. Anyway, my point is that we have this idea that we can just drop people in a second. How different that is from what St. Paul says, bear one another's burdens out of love for Christ. And this spiritual friendship, dear brothers and sisters, you know, there's a natural, real friendship of honor that Aristotle talks about, and then in Christianity becomes spiritual friendship. It becomes even deeper. The spiritual friendship is something that's actually holy, and it makes saints. And if you look at the history of the saints, they've had a lot of good friends. Like deep, profound, messy, let me be clear about that, messy, real friendships. Where there was real pain, real drama, real conflict, real friendship. Not neat and tidy. Can't be neat and tidy on earth. Not 100%. And these friendships existed between men and men, between women and women, and between men and women, if you look through the history of the saints. And they tell us that we're called to this, because it was Jesus we're called to. Jesus had good male friends, Jesus had good female friends, as the Catechism says. Friendship is the blossom of chastity. If you're being chaste, your heart is open for friendship. And it's the kind of thing that we'll know in heaven, right? You're supposed to already know on earth. We believe in one holy Catholic and apostolic church, the communion of saints, right? That communion takes place here, but it's deepened in heaven. That's what we'll know in heaven. Utter, complete friendship. Including, and this will be my last point, including with Jesus. And that's something else that St. Thomas Aquinas says, that charity, supernatural love, that another name for that, especially when shown to God, another name for the love we're supposed to have for God is just friendship. That we're supposed to be deep, real, intimate friends with Jesus Christ and with God the Father and the Holy Spirit. We'll focus on Jesus now. That Martha, Mary, and Lazarus were not friends with Jesus and saints on the side. They were saints because they were friends with Jesus. Their friendship with him is what made them holy. And friendship with Jesus is what makes us holy too. Now that, I mean, we have to work on the virtues and stuff, but I tell people this all the time. It's like, if you come to me and you're like, I'm having marital difficulties, what virtues should I work on? The first thing I'll ask is, what does your spouse have a problem with? like, how is your relationship with your spouse going? No, Father, I just want to know abstractly what virtues I should work on. That's not going to work. The point of having these virtues is for the sake of the relationship. In the same way, we should be friends with Jesus. And yeah, that means we need to work on ourselves. And yeah, that means we need to die to ourselves. And yeah, that means we need to fix ourselves. But not in the abstract, as a matter of just being close to him. Friendship, real friendship, deep friendship. Like, actually opening our hearts and telling him everything. That kind of friendship with Jesus. Whether it be very emotional or not very emotional at all, as long as it's intimate. That makes us holy. And that's what we're called to have. I no longer call you servants, but friends. You are my friends if you do what I command you. So, dear brothers and sisters, this weekend, what I'd ask you to do is pray for the friends that you have in your life, whether they're closer or further away. Pray, all of us should pray that we be better friends. Because there's a reason why Aristotle puts it at the end of his ethics. It requires all the virtues to be a good friend. Pray that we be better friends with Jesus and have a real, actual relationship with him, a friendship with him. That is a real thing in our heart and in our mind and in our soul. And lastly, as we come to communion today, just take a moment to imagine. To imagine, maybe just to sit with and reflect about the relationship Jesus had with Martha, Mary, and Lazarus. Picture that friendship. Picture that friendship. And realize that that's what holiness looks like. God bless you all.